It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Woo-hoo, indeed it is hump day. You have made it halfway through the week. Congratulations, I am Kim Munson. Welcome to the show. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Cody, we had quite a time this week getting it right. Normally, we're typically on it, you know, and every once in a while, Mama said there'd be days like this. And so we had to do three times, but we finally got it correct because you have a very excellent op-ed. I'm talking about Cody Hubley, who's in studio with me. He's written a very important piece on student loans, and we finally got it right. So we promise we won't do that every week. We'll just get it to you once, but great piece, and so we want to make sure we got it right. So welcome. It's great to have
you
here.
Thank you.
And also in studio with me is Jonathan Woodley. Jonathan is stepping up. He's running for Colorado House District 5. Very important. And Jonathan, it's great to have you here as well.
Thank you very much, Kim. And good morning, Colorado, and to the millions of listeners listening in. This should be fun.
I hope it's a million. Millions, you know. We're working on it. We're working on increasing that. So as we look at these issues, all of these issues, there's so much going on down at the State House. That's why it's so important that people are stepping up like Jonathan Woodley to run for office. But we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And when you look at these issues in the context of those, you know, within those parameters, it gives you a good basis on how to converse with others about this. And so there's so many different pieces of legislation down at the State House right now that has force all over it. And one of those, well, it's really, there could be code words for force. It can be regulation, it can be mandate, it can be coercion, regulation, just all kinds of things. Whenever you see these words, registry, you know, a variety of things, we see force in that. And we're freedom people. And that's why we do this show, is so that you can get your brain around these issues and talk with your friends and your family in calm, reasonable voices. And socialism ultimately comes down to force. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, or, Steve, your favorite, unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something is a good idea, you should not need force to implement it. But we're continuing to see force in all of these things that, you know, if they are responsibly used freely, they enhance our lives, allow us to thrive and prosper, such as transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data, healthcare. We need to continue to be working towards freedom instead of force in those particular issues. Always like to say thank you to the team, to Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for your support and your good work. And thank you to each of you listeners. You're treasured, you're valued, have a purpose. Today, go out and strive for excellence. And take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. For our inspiration today, I went to Andrew Carnegie, or some say Andrew Carnegie. And I remember we had a Carnegie Library in my hometown. And it's quite a story. You may remember this, but Andrew Carnegie was born in 1835. He died in 1919. He was born in Scotland. He became an American industrialist who led the enormous expansion of the American steel industry in the late 19th century. He was also one of the most important philanthropists of his era. When he was 13, he went to work and he changed spools of thread for 12 hours a day in a Northside cotton factory. The job paid just $1.20 a week, but the energetic bobbin boy was eager to better himself. He quickly became enthusiastically Americanized, educating himself by reading and writing and attending night school.
On Saturdays, the young Scotsman and future steel tycoon was among many working boys who borrowed books from Colonel James Anderson's personal library at his stately Greek Revival-style mansion in Manchester. Colonel Anderson, who attained his military rank in the War of 1812, made his fortune in business and iron manufacturing, and his generosity with his books inspired Carnegie to later finance construction of 2,509 free public libraries worldwide. And this is what Andrew Carnegie said. He said, "The average person puts only 25% of his energy and ability into his work. The world takes off its hat to those who put in more than 50% of their capacity, and it stands on its head for those few and far between souls who devote 100%. I thought that was very inspirational for today. And we're kind of jammed on time, and normally I try to have some levity, some humor. And as I looked at the joke, I actually didn't think it was that funny. So we're going to pass that up, because on the line with us is Pam Long, and we've talked with her the last couple of mornings. Today is a very important day down at the state capitol. This school immunization or vaccination bill is being heard. It's being fast-tracked, and that is why we want to make sure that you understand what's going on. So, Pam Long, welcome to the show again. It's, you know, it's going to be a habit starting to talk to you every morning about 6:10, you know.
Well, that's right. And this morning, there are already hundreds of parents on the road going to the Capitol in Denver to oppose this immunization bill today in the Senate hearing.
Well, and so for those that may have not heard the show the last couple of days, let's set this up. What's going on, Pam Long?
Okay, so SB 163, we've talked about the coercive government registry in this bill, the attack on religious beliefs by removing the religious exemption that has been in place since 1978 in our statute. Today, let's address the shaming of anyone who exempts from one of now 70 recommended vaccines from the CDC. This bill creates a 95% vaccine-protected standard for schools. We will have hundreds of schools that will not meet this standard and will exclude students to meet this new goal. This is segregation of healthy students. And the recent breaches in Medicaid and the Department of Education, they show us the very real possibility that these students will be victims of harassment and hate speech when their personally identifying information is released to the public, their names, their phone numbers, their addresses. This is harassment and hate speech just waiting to happen under this bill. There is no 95% vaccinated standard in the workplace or the public. But is that next for adults? I mean, we see there are 60 industry lobbyists on this bill.
Really? And you can actually track that, correct?
Yeah. Yes, you go to the Secretary of State Tracer homepage and put the bill number in.
Okay. Now, there's a couple of things here that, you know, I vaccinated my kids, Pam, but that was kind of back in the old days where I think there were maybe 10 or 11. You've mentioned that at this particular point in time, there is a recommended list from the CDC of almost 70. But I've kind of looked at these vaccination coercion bills as passed. And I even realized that in the legislation, they talked about George Washington inoculating the troops against smallpox and then yellow fever, you know, in World War, I think it was 1 and 2. And those seem like good ideas to me. So it goes to the past where there's been some success, but that was the past. Now we look where we are right now, and there's a recommended list of 70, but you see recommended, and then you're starting to see the word mandatory. I see that kind of backfilling. But I also see danger in the future, Pam, and that is there could be things that this unelected board might mandate that people wouldn't have an opportunity to say no to. And I see great danger in what could happen in the future as well, Pam.
Oh, absolutely. There are 300 new vaccines in research and development. These are vaccines for STDs. These are vaccines for obesity. These are vaccines for the common cold. I mean, right now we already know that the majority of people, 3 out of 4 people, do not take the influenza vaccine, which could become mandatory. Do not take the very reactive HPV Gardasil vaccine. There are good reasons to exempt from many of these vaccines. Many children exempt from the hepatitis B vaccine. That is a sexually transmitted disease prevalent only in prostitutes and drug users. There's no justifiable reason that a child in the K through 12 setting would need that vaccine.
Okay, so a couple of other things, though. You mentioned, I think it would be coercion, if you will, and that, in fact, personal names could be released. And if I remember right, I think Patty had pulled, or I'd seen it on a list, that there's a rules called FERPA that was put in place to protect the identity of children and the data collection of children. Is that ringing a bell with you at all, Pam?
Oh, I'm a FERPA guru. What you need to know, Kim, is that FERPA is the Federal Privacy Protection of Student Records. Right now, you hand in your shot records, your vaccine records, your exemptions to the local school, and that federal law prohibits those records from being shared, including the medical record, to anyone outside the school without prior written consent. This is a much stronger protection than HIPAA. HIPAA actually is a permission slip to the government to share your medical records across the state and the country without your knowledge or consent. And what is happening in this bill is parents who exempt from one vaccine will be stripped of their FERPA protections and have to submit their exemptions to the state. But if you get all 70 doses, you get to keep your FERPA protection. This is the heart of the discrimination in this
okay,
bill.
Okay, I get it. Okay, so people are treated differently. But it seems to me, Pam Long, and we may have to research this out, is that it seemed like earlier in the session that there was a bill that was put in place that opened the window up on FERPA, the data collection
yes.
and sharing of our children, for a period of time. So it opened up that instead of protecting kids, there is also a bill in the Colorado legislature. So it's like there's all this stuff is kind of working together to share the data on our children. And I think most parents are like, wait a minute, I don't think that's such a great idea. You know, in fact, if we want to have a vaccination talk, I think we should. But this bill is not the right thing for sure, Pam Long.
This is definitely something we need people calling the governor today. We need people showing up at the Capitol today. We need people testifying today because this is a big data grab. This is a big control bill. This is a take away your choice from the 70 doses right now and the 300 in the pipeline.
Okay, so that brings us to what needs to be done exactly today. You said call the governor, call the members of the, is it the Senate? Health Committee, is that
Senate
right?
Senate Health.
Okay.
That's right.
And then I imagine there's probably, as you mentioned, there's going to be a lot of people with the little children and strollers down there because this is something, when you start to mess with kids, moms and dads get kind of concerned about that, Pam Long.
Oh, there will be mama bears all over the Capitol today. And let's see if the media shows up and tells their story.
Okay. Anything else, Pam Long, that we need to talk about?
This bill is moving fast, and we need people contacting their senators to kill it fast.
Okay. Hey, you know what? How about let's talk again tomorrow morning at 6:10. Will that work okay for you? Because I want to know what's going to...
That works for me.
Okay. We'll talk to you tomorrow. You can give us an update on what's happening. Pam Long, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it, and good luck on everything today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, as many of you know, I am truly an entrepreneur. I buy my airtime, so that means I have full journalistic control of the show. But that also means I also am have these great sponsors that keep me on the air, and one of them is Hooters Restaurants. The Avs and the Nuggets are in the hunt of their divisions. March Madness is right around the corner, and the place to watch all these games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of that action. Wednesday, Steve, is Dine-In Wing Day. All the wings you can eat for $15.99. They've got these great new roasted wings. My favorite, I love the boneless. And if you don't want to cook, you can drop by Hooters Restaurants and pick up dinner, or you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. More information, go to my website, kimmunson.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Jonathan Woodley has stepped up to the plate. He is running for House District 5 here in Colorado. There are so many issues that are coming before us that it's so important that we have people step up and run for office. I'm thrilled to talk with Jonathan Woodley. We will be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in home ownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. In studio with me is Jonathan Woodley. He is running for House District 5. Also in studio with me is Cody Hubley, who has written a very excellent op-ed that you can find at my website regarding the student loan crisis here in America. And we'll talk with Cody about that in segments 3 and 4. But Jonathan Woodley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kim.
And thank you for stepping up.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of work. It takes a lot to put yourself out there. So why?
Well, Kim, to be honest, because someone has to. Okay. And I find it absurd that seats on a local and a state level go uncontested. And whether or not there's a pathway to victory or not. See, the vision needs to be big picture, and there's such a small picture mentality right now going on. And we can see it in the conservative movement, in the Republican Party. I ask questions like, how are we building a pipeline of candidates? Because I don't think we have.
Good point.
I think that's where we've been finding a weakness. We just go election to election, mm-hmm. Picking people out. But we need to start developing candidates. So if I can at least move the needle, in Denver. Now, I am a proud.
So this is the Denver area.
Well, I'm in Denver, and Denver's very difficult, very difficult. But I'm a proud Republican. I'm a conservative in Denver, and I'm going to speak out. And these are we just find ourselves right now, lacking the amount of candidates, and that's why I'm stepping out.
Jonathan, I think you bring forth a very excellent point. The fact that it seems that with some of these races, we have not even fielded candidates because there's been this adage that, we can't win. I really think that we need to, and as conservatives, when I say conservative, that means conserving. It's kind of gotten a bad rap, the word conservative, over the years. But what it means is conserving these principles. That these American principles of the idea that we have these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And that is worth fighting for. And so when you say the word conservative, that's really what we're talking about, those principles. And we need to have people step forward, and then we need to support them as well. And then when they are elected, we need to make sure that we stay in contact. It's, politics or this relationship with the people that you elect should be an interactive sport, I think.
Absolutely. And I think in the past years, there's been so much complacency. When we do have victories, right? When we do have victories, we just sit back and think that's going to last. But we need to keep plugging away. It's like watering your lawn, okay? You can have a great green lawn, but if you're not going to take care of it, that weed's going to grow, and that weed's going to spread. And that's what we're seeing right now. And I, fortunately and unfortunately, live in the middle of downtown. So I see a lot of things that are coming to other suburban areas. It's spreading, okay? And it's in Denver. Unfortunately, it's like I'm seeing the future of Colorado from Denver. And a lot of people didn't take me seriously in the city council race. I would go to, Republican breakfast and everything, and I would say, "Hey, look, this is a major threat. This socialism idea, this communist idea, it is a real threat." And everybody's like, "Well, it's not going to get to that point. We'll never be like that, really."
Well, and in that particular city council race, let's see, you were running. Who were the opponents in that?
So the opponents were the heir apparent, supposedly Albus Brooks, to the mayor. to when Michael Hancock was done, Alice Brooks was supposed to swipe, mm-hmm. you know, come right in. And Candy Sitabaka, mm-hmm. who eventually won. Mm-hmm. And she won basically on a socialist, you know, communist, tribalism.
Yes.
You know.
All those words that we're hearing out there.
Collectivism, everything. And and we can see the policies that are coming out of Denver right now. And it's just going to get more extreme. So we need to put a stop to it. You know, we need to start, again, putting people in positions to where they can run, to not be scared of running. I'm tired of living in the shadows. I don't know about, mm-hmm. you know, other Republicans in other areas.
Now, Jonathan, I recently had written an op-ed, so we are doing a writer circle on the website. Cody's featured this week regarding the homelessness industrial complex. And I'd been downtown. I've been in Colorado for a long time. Denver, you know, wasn't a perfect city for sure, but it was more this pristine, you know, queen city of the plains. And I was downtown recently, and I was shocked at how dirty it was, mm-hmm. and the camping. And, you know, we're seeing down at the legislature, there's a piece of legislation that basically says that people can use any of their bodily functions anywhere if the government hasn't provided a place for them to go to the bathroom. They can go to the bathroom anywhere. I mean, if that doesn't get the attention of Blue Dog Democrats, unaffiliated Republicans, conservatives, libertarians, I don't know what would, Jonathan Woodley.
No, absolutely. And again, with, you know, I'm not here to keep mentioning her name because it's not about, you know, Candy Sitabaka, but what she's trying to do is repeal the camping ban without any plan moving forward. Now, I remember when I moved to Denver, downtown area in the metro area 20 years ago, you know, we did have homeless, but I could probably recognize on a daily basis the same four or five homeless people. Mm-hmm. And while I didn't know their names, I gave them names. Uh-huh. Now it just keeps growing and growing and growing. And when we have extreme leftist policies, it'll continue to grow.
It will continue to grow.
Continue to grow. And hey, look, eventually Denver's going to run out of room. And guess where they're going to go? Jefferson, Adams.
They already are.
Exactly. So, you know, we need to find real solutions, not just finding, you know, we all know what the problem is, right? But we need to work on solutions, and we can only do that together. But there's no conversation right now.
So, Jonathan Woodley, how can people get more information about you?
So you can follow me on my website is jpwoodley.com.
Okay. And so it's JP and then Woodley, right?
Correct.
.com. Okay, jpwoodley.com.
And through that website, you can get my Facebook, Twitter,
excellent.
Instagram. I try and keep up on social media as much as possible. And I'm definitely out there. And
well, and another thing, early money is really helpful, you know, to be able to buy yard signs and you know, just to help you with the campaign. And it seems that actually, you mentioned Candy Sitabaka. She was part of this whole Emerge program, which the goal has been to train women and help them get websites. I mean, it's very, very well organized. And it seems like our side, you guys that are stepping up, I mean, it's difficult to get the money together to get the website and all that because
a lot of it is self-funding. That city council race, while I had some family and friends, a limited number, you know, donating to me, I primarily funded that myself. And by all means, I'm not rich in any sense of the word, but I was able to even make some sort of impact within the six or seven months that I was actually in the race. You know, imagine if, you know, I'm very frugal. I'm very efficient with money. So any donors, it doesn't matter where you live, because at the end of the day, yes, I'm running for HD5, but it's still a seat in the Colorado House of Representatives. And I think that that's a point that many people miss is, you know what? He's not in my district. Why should I support him? Well, because at the end of the day, it's a seat. It's a vote.
Yeah, we need to, yes, support people across the spectrum. And just a couple of things. I don't think people actually may know, and they may not know this about you, that you're a sergeant in the National Guard.
Correct.
And you have a master's. You're studying for another master's. You've been in
in the restaurant business right in Denver. So, I mean, you know a lot of what's going on, your life experience. And so, yes, people need to step up. And, you know, even the price of a cup of coffee or a couple of cups of coffee will be helpful. If a lot of people do that, it helps get our candidates competitive.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a combat veteran. I was the Colorado National Guard. I'm in field artillery. So we did combat in Iraq and various places in the Middle East from 16 to 17. And, you know, I started coming out when I realized that I was living inside of a bubble. Mm-hmm. Honestly, if you're in Colorado and you don't travel very much, you get stuck in your environment and you don't really see what's going on. And it wasn't until I left and came back and I was like blown away by, wow, this has
changed.
It's changed, but this has always been going on, and I hadn't been able to recognize it. So, and that's why I keep fighting, and I'm going to continue to keep fighting.
Great. What else? Is there anything else you want to make sure that our listeners know about you?
About me? No, but I found something online, and I think you might enjoy this, because first of all, I'm, you know, this race, any race that we do, but especially now, it's more than just Republican versus Democrat or capitalism versus socialism. It really is the freedom versus force. And and people really need to understand, like, what's at stake right now. And it really is basically freedom versus force. But I think you'll enjoy this. Socialism is resentment disguised as compassion, enforced by tyranny, disguised as tolerance. And you know, we're seeing that with the way that people are making up these bills, the way they're writing it. And, you know, we need to step up, especially, hey, let's start today at the Capitol. If you have done nothing to this point to step up.
Make a call, show up.
Do something.
Do something.
Do something.
We all have a responsibility. Well, Jonathan Woodley, thank you so much for stepping up. And that website is jpwoodley.com. Can people contribute there?
They can. They can. They have all the links. Very user-friendly.
Okay, great. Well, wonderful. You know, as this race continues on, let's get you back on the show.
Absolutely.
Okay, great to have you here.
Thank you, Kim.
Jason McBride, what did you think of Jonathan Woodley's quotes about the disguising of compassion and what it really is? And what's your thoughts on that, Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management?
You know, I think quotes are a great way to get things across because they're memorable. In fact, my wife and I were talking the other night that people don't use colloquialisms as often as they used to, and she's really good at it. She comes up with some real funny ones, like, you know, I'm full as a tick on a hound dog and all kinds of hillbilly sounding stuff, but you remember that stuff.
Well, that's true. And, you know, to that point, going down to the Capitol, Jason, is typically you get 3 minutes if you go to city council, you know, as a citizen, or down to the state house. You get 3 minutes to make your point. And it's important to become concise, be able to have some humor in it, and tell a story. And people are like, oh, I don't know if I can do that in 3 minutes. It's like in a country song. You can actually, you know, do all kinds of things in 3 minutes. So people should be able to do that. So practice is an important thing. But Jason McBride, what else is going on, you know, in the market over at Presidential Wealth Management?
Well, you know, the market continues to be resilient. It looked like yesterday might be kind of a rough day. But I'll tell you, by the end of the day, the markets had recovered most of the losses, closed in the top end of their range. NASDAQ actually turned positive, and it looks like it's, you know, we're going to get a fairly strong opening this morning. So this coronavirus, which was supposed to be such a big deal, you know, it's interesting, Kim, that, you know, it's still spreading. There's still more cases, but, you know, the media is not screaming and yelling about it like it's the end of the world now. They've moved on to the next shiny object, and, you know, this isn't really that important to them anymore.
You know, that's interesting. One thing, you know, Patty and I have been doing research on this, and we had Josh Phillip on from the Epic Times earlier in the week, and we've mentioned this long before, well, I wouldn't say long before, but it looks like the media is saying that this is now a man-made virus, which that's what really concerns me, Jason McBride.
Yeah, I've seen things both ways. You know, the media likes to say it's a man-made virus until, you know, a Republican intimates it might be, and then they call it ridiculous. I saw him really trashing on Tom Cotton the other day.
Oh.
I don't know if it's man-made or not man-made. I guess there's a kind of a
we'll probably find out.
Just a few blocks up the street from where it started, so anything's possible. I don't know what to think about that, Kim.
I think we'll find out. But, Jason,
we will? From who?
well, let me get back to you on that one. Maybe listen to our show. So one other thing, and then we're going to go to break, is you have spent a lot of time on, and I think there's a lot of really good information in your early year market indicator, and people can get that at our shared website, airpresidential.com. But there's a lot of great information on that, and thank you for putting that together, Jason McBride.
Yeah, you bet, Kim. One of the indicators that's in there is the first five trading days, and that's an indicator that shows if the market is positive after the first five trading days of the year. 91% of the time, when it's been up the first 5 days, you have a 91% chance of at least not getting your rear end kicked for the rest of the year. So is that the be-all, end-all, Kim? No, I don't think it is, but it's a little bit more information that you can put into your, you know, into your another arrow in the quill to give you a little bit more guidance for the year. So there's five indicators in their total. This is just one of them, and the guide goes through more detail on all of them, and we rank them, you know, from one to five. Instead of stars, we used fortune tellers in there.
Well, I like it, and, you know, knowledge is power. So, Jason McBride, thank you for all that you do, and if people would like more information, go to airpresidential.com, podcasts, all kinds of great information there. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, Kim, have a great show.
Thanks so much. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Cody Hubley has done a very important piece regarding this whole student loan thing. But I did need to mention, I had forgotten to do this, and that is we're also highlighting a bill. We were talking about the vaccination bill. But Patty had pulled this, and this is just absolutely amazing. It's House Bill 20, 1089. It's employee protection for lawful off-duty activities. And basically, if someone comes to work and they are not ready to do the job, and maybe it's because they might have been imbibing with marijuana or something like that, and they come in and they cannot do the job, they are protected from being fired. And this is not a place where government needs to be involved. People need to be responsible for their actions. And when they come to work, they have made an agreement with their employer that they will be there and will be able to do the job the way the employer has hired them to do that. If they can't do that, the employer should have the right to terminate them. And this bill says they can't. And I had been looking, I can't remember if it was in the Post or if it was in the Denver Business Journal, but actually a new business filings are down in Colorado. We've had, I think, more closures of businesses than opening. And so we're starting to see the effects of these many bad policies. And that is why it is so important that people step up, run for office. And again, it's, you know, this is government getting in between the relationship between the employer and the employee. This is House Bill 20, 1089. You want another reason to go down to the State House? This would be one of them. Let's go to break. When we come back, Cody Hubley has a very important op-ed on my website. The title on that is Danger, Danger, Iceberg Ahead or something like that, isn't it, Cody?
That's right.
Okay.
It's Student Loan Asset-Backed Securities.
Okay. Also known as SLABs.
That's
what
right.
A name. What a name. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. It is kimmunson.com. And be sure and do that this morning because there is this really excellent piece that Cody Hubley has done. He's part of our writer's circle. And he's done an op-ed regarding the whole student loan crisis. Actually, I think you really hit a nerve on that, Cody, because we had wanted to boost that that piece through Facebook, and they denied us twice. So that means that there must be some good information in there.
You know, I'm in good company, though. If you're a human rights lawyer in China and you're locked up, you know, you're doing something right. If you're a doctor that says, hey, a virus is spreading around and I think we got to do something about it, and you get locked up, you're doing something right. So when they tell you don't say this, I think people should read it.
I think that's for sure. So that is at my website, kimmunson.com. And the student loan thing, there's a lot of conversation about it. Bernie says he's going to pay off the loans. How did we get here, Cody Hubley?
You know, we could go back a long time ago, but to make it simple, let's start in 1965, where all this really began. It was called the Higher Education Act of 1965, and it created a program called the Federal Family Education Loan. And what this did was it took taxpayer funds, it gave them to private banks to lend out to students, and then if the students defaulted on the loans, the government would use taxpayer dollars to reimburse those banks up to 98% of the principal and cover all of the interest. So it was a really attractive investment option for banks, right? It was free money from the government, and if there was really no risk either.
Okay. Sounds kind of like the mortgage thing.
Absolutely. What they ended up doing more recently, just like we had in this mortgage crisis, is they took these student loans, they packaged them up together. They call it the financialization of student loans, and they bundle them all up in a group, and they kind of resell that group to investors. Who then kind of get payments, almost like stock dividends you would get back or bond payments. They get payments regularly on these student loan asset-backed securities.
And those are called slabs.
They're called slabs.
Okay.
So really most of the government debt, we're talking about $1.75 trillion, more than anywhere else in the world. It's a record, of course.
You should be the smartest people in the world.
It's a heck of a lot of money. We sure should, and our company should see our students that way too, as the smartest people in the world with as much money as we've spent. So these slabs, about $1.2 trillion of that $1.75 trillion is already direct federal loans now. In 2010, things were changed so that the government took over handing out these student loans. They kind of cut the banks out of some of this private lending where they were getting the government money, and they expanded the government program. Of course, they're giving out loans with, without checking income, without checking if you could ever pay it back, certainly without seeing if your major that you're going to enroll in has any opportunity of jobs coming, you know, in mm-hmm. the future. And so the scary part, too, is when you have people like Bernie Sanders, and Donald Trump has acknowledged that even people who like Trump like free stuff. So socialism is worrisome even to him. But when you have people like Bernie Sanders that say,
saying Trump has acknowledged that people like free stuff. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. The quote to his donors, several Republicans, I think Eric Bolling was one of them from Fox News. It said, a lot of people think it'll be easy to beat socialism in 2020. That's from President Trump. The truth is, it might not be so easy. You can have someone who loves Trump, but many people love free stuff, too. If Sanders or other socialist candidates tell Americans, especially young voters, that they're going to cancel their debt, that's a tough one to run against.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's a concern. It's a concern for
that.
All
okay.
of us. Yeah, it's a concern for all of us. If you want capitalism or, you know, the free market to win out, it's our opportunity to do something for students. You know, we've kind of had this quasi system of capitalism and socialism mixed. It takes the worst aspects of both. It penalizes some people sometimes using capitalism and rewards others who really should probably fail responsibly using socialism. It's the worst of both worlds, really. And so if Bernie Sanders cancels all the student loan debt, so we're talking about taxpayers being on the hook for $1.2 trillion, right? He can do that. That's money that the government has lended out directly. The other stuff is held by private banks. And if you buy back that loans, you can't just get rid of it. It's privately held debt, right? So if you buy back that loans, you give them money for the principal, these banks stop getting interest payments on that. and they depend on him, just like they did for mortgages. The scary thing is there's no collateral for these loans. There's no houses that they can claw back to put on their balance sheet. And so it could set up a real crisis. You know, when we bailed out the banks in TARP, it was $633 billion or so. And that's about the remaining balance of this private debt held by banks in the student loan crisis. So it's a scary situation if it's a scary situation to talk about, period.
So, Cody, you know, I grew up that your word is your bond. And so if, in fact, kids took out these loans, they should have realized that, yes, they would have the responsibility to pay them back. I think that maybe there's these promises, though, that in their minds they hadn't really thought that through. And once the government, and that was in 2010, and so that was the previous administration, once they took that over, and I almost think – it was like taking, Obamacare as well. It seems like this is actually the result they really wanted, is we now have young people that are like, how on earth am I going to pay this off? I got the promise that I saw on the back of the bus as I was, you know, or the on the train, these advertisements like, get your master's, do this, and you are going to be successful. And then they graduate, and the job they thought was going to be there wasn't there, and they're like, what am I going to do?
Yeah, let's remember that people are taking on this debt so that they can get a good paying job. And when they graduate, and less than half the people who are graduating are using their degrees, you know, they're not finding the jobs that they went to school for. And then they end up going back to school thinking, well, if I have another degree or if I have another class, it's going to help me out. You mentioned young people. I want to highlight, though, that this is not just some millennial problem. Although people age 30 to 39 hold the bulk of the money, the monetary value of this debt, this is actually affecting more than half of baby boomers. In fact, from 2004 until currently, the increase in debt taken on by baby boomers was 1,256%. So now we're at anywhere from $86 billion to a Bloomberg article quoted at $100 billion is held by baby boomers. They are trying to help out their kids, their grandkids, and they're at a point where they needed those savings for retirement. So this is not just something exclusive to young people where we can easily dismiss it and say they should be more responsible. It's something that's dragging us all down.
Okay, so Jonathan Woodley, what would you like to say about this?
Well, my question is, so say student loans, you know, get forgiven, right? The process is just going to start over again because that's just a short-term solution. No one's really looking at the long-term, which the big problem is the cost of this education. You know, why are colleges charging so much for things, especially online college, right?
Yeah, so the cost of even public institutions over the last 20 years has risen more than 221% for in-state tuition. So there's not too many low-cost options anymore. And a lot of that money is going to swelling the ranks of administration, which is growing faster than both students, enrolled students, and teachers. It's administrative positions that are 100K plus, right?
Plus pensions.
That's right. Yeah, you know, so you could go back to a free market system where private banks are giving out the loans. Then they would have an incentive, especially if, you know, in 1978 and through 2005, Joe Biden worked really hard to make sure you couldn't discharge these loans in bankruptcy. So as these baby boomers are taking on these loans and they're needing their retirement money, if they don't pay off these loans that they're trying to help their kids out with, the loans will take away from their Social Security. Not just them voluntarily paying it, it will actually deduct from their Social Security payments or any disability payments as well. It's a debt that you cannot escape no matter what you do.
Joe Biden was involved with that.
Absolutely. He started in 1978. He worked across several administrations, at least five administrations, I think. It started with the Middle Income Student Assistance Act, and it ended up going all the way up through 2005. He honed it every time to make sure that the requirements for loans were lessened, so you didn't have to prove you could pay it back. You didn't have to have parents help. But he made sure, too, that whether it was vocational school or any other type of education, that you couldn't get rid of it in bankruptcy.
Interesting.
And I think you hit it right there, talking about the administrative costs. I mean, that goes far beyond just college. I mean, we're talking about public education as
well. Absolutely, K through
12. We're talking about health care, but yet we're not doing anything about it. I mean, you cut out the middleman, you'll save a lot of money.
It's interesting that you bring up healthcare too, because in 2010, when we kind of during the Obama administration, when they modified this, they actually passed this bill that changed the student loan program about 7 days after the Affordable Care Act. And they needed to do that so that they could use what they called savings in the Student Loan Act. I don't know how
That's
you
right.
save they, from debt, but they needed the savings in this so that the Senate and House had passed a different Affordable Care Act. They didn't agree with each other, right? And they couldn't agree on anything.
What they call
totally.
It, reconciliation or
yes.
something?
Yes. So they needed the Student Loan Act. They needed to consider a certain amount of savings from that in order to be able to reconcile those two bills, where they could pass the Senate bill first, and then the House could go back and say, oh, let's vote on the student loan bill, which also reconciles, you know, it has enough savings, that they called it, so that we can reconcile the Affordable Care Act. So they were intimately tied together, and you couldn't have one without the other.
Oh, thank you for clarifying that. I knew that they were related, but I couldn't quite remember how. Gentlemen, this is such a great show. It's quick. Let's go to break. We'll continue on. Cody Hubley, this piece that you have written, which is on my website, kimmunson.com, and the title on it is Iceberg Right Ahead Due to Student Loan Asset-Backed Securities. Be sure and take a read on that. This is Kim Munson. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. And you can take a look at all of our curated authors there. We've got this great piece by Cody Hubley regarding the slabs. What a goofy name. Mm-hmm. The Student Loan Asset-Backed Securities. Let's jump in here. Before we do that, though, Susan said, what else gets forgotten is that the loan goes to pay people to teach. It always seems to me that kids don't understand that there's an actual cost to, you know, as they're getting their education. It's a similar disconnect between the free health care and the cost to pay a doctor. It's as if the service should be free as opposed to a tangible good. And I think that's such an important point to make. Elizabeth Warren talks about free college, but yet she was paid over $440,000 as a Harvard professor. So if in fact college should be free, that means she should be working for free. But that's not what they're thinking about, Cody. So,
well, you know, speaking of free, part of this in 2010 when these reforms happened, part of it was supposed to be free online classes where people could go and take online classes that might actually lead them to employment. But when they needed to cut out some costs so that they could reconcile the health care and the student loan thing together, they cut out that benefit. And that was something that a lot of people would have been excited about. I mean, there's a lot of online classes. They call them massive online open courseware that you can take out there. But if you don't pay, you're not.
They don't teach it for free.
No, they don't. Well,
pays for it.
Yeah, and a lot of them are recorded from college lectures too. You know, from Harvard, MIT, and other great places as well. So someone was paying for it, but then other people can benefit. But you know, it goes. It's great to increase your own knowledge, but it doesn't really help you get a job unless you can prove that you have those skills. You know, but I think, you know, as we were going to break, you talked about jobs, and I think that's where this needs to go, because that's why people are taking on the debt. It's why they're struggling to pay it off, is because of jobs. So we've got 800,000 people graduating from American colleges every year in all kinds of fields, right? Less than half of them are getting employed in the field related to their degree, so most of them don't need it. They end up in an underpaid field that they could have just gone into and started paying it back. So let's talk about, I guess, specifically Colorado, since that's where we are. And we're talking about $734,000 in student loan debt, which means half.
How much?
$734,000 in student loan debt.
$734,000
people are affected by student loan debt in Colorado. The dollar amount is $26 billion. You're right. That okay. would be a bargain, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
We've solved the problem, everybody.
Way to go.
Right. And, you know, basically it means that if you see two young people on the street, one of them has student loan debt. It affects half of all young people in our state. And the people who are suffering the worst are the people in our rural mountain communities. Everybody on the outskirts is having a lot of trouble paying back their their debt, finding employment. And sometimes they're taking out loans in, you know, 700% of the national average. The national average, by the way, is about $35,000, $37,000 per person.
Student loan debt of the people that have it
or spending about $35,000, 20% of them are taking out more than $100,000. You can only get $31,000 from the government directly subsidized, and the rest will come from other government programs or from private loans. And people aren't necessarily spending the money wisely either. They gave out student loans in the UK, for instance, where, you know, they've tried to solve this problem. And the Manchester bomber actually used his student loan money to gather the supplies to commit his terrorist act.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, we can complain about people here using it for pizza and parties, but at least they're not doing that, right? But let's talk about jobs here. So Cory Gardner, our senator, put forth this idea that not bad, not great, but it's a start for sure. He wanted to make a $10,000 tax break that employers could get by paying $10,000 or so towards your student loans. So it was kind of like a revolving door. They give you $10,000 that you pay on your loans, and then the government turns around and gives them a $10,000 tax break. So I'm not sure if it really goes to solve the problem. It just seems like it moves it around and shifts it, okay, right? As far as I could tell, that was Senate Bill 3595. The last time any action was on it was October 11, 2018. It was read twice and referred to the Committee on Finance, and then it dropped from there.
Okay.
But, you know, at least he's trying something. He said he had $50,000 in student loan debt. He was still paying off himself. He is an attorney, right? The more worrisome, I think, thing that we've got to discuss is Ken Buck's bill, H.R. 1044. Also, the Senate bill, S-386, it was called the Fairness for High-Skilled Immigrants Act of 2019. This was championed by Silicon Valley, right? These are the same guys back in, I think, 2014, before when Steve Jobs was alive as well. Google and Apple and Amazon and Adobe, and I'm not sure how many companies they were, but they basically got together and said, let's keep everybody's wages down. And you don't hire people that we fire, and we won't hire your people, and we're going to keep the wages down. So that's what these guys are trying to do. So if you have any doubt about the motivation behind this program that we'll talk about, there you go. You can see it in a lawsuit from 2014.
And did you highlight all this in your piece? And you've got links in there as well, right?
Not necessarily all this. That's why you got to listen to the show, too.
Okay, good for you.
You know, having a conversation is a little bit different than putting it in there. I hit 1,000 words, and some people's attention span, I mean, we're talking about $1.75 trillion, and 1,000 words doesn't cover it by far, right?
Good point.
So we could have this conversation every day for a while and still not get to the bottom of it. But what Kim Buck did was he wanted to – so – H-1B workers are the problem, right? These are immigrants, predominantly Indians. They're college-trained workers. They can stay for 6 years. They come over. And then after the 6 years, hopefully their employer would sponsor them for a green card so that they don't have to go back. They also get to bring their spouses over, their H-4 spouses and their kids as well. It's supposed to be a program that's capped at $85,000 a year, so $85,000, you know, foreigners taking the jobs of Americans, right? But in reality, the numbers are really unlimited. In fact, as long as you're working for a university, there's no cap on the program. If you're also working for a nonprofit, there's no cap on the program. So the numbers are really incredible when you think about it.
Just a point on that, Cody, is in the education system and in the nonprofit system, we are seeing all kinds of lurching to the left, forced policies, socialization, and then they're getting a pass on this. This is somewhat astounding. We're going to be running out of time here quickly, but. So, in essence, what you're saying is that we're bringing in workers that are being paid less than what an American worker would be paid. Now, there's other things I'd like to mention, and that is that policy is making labor so expensive for the American worker. One of the ways that we can get to a point where our kids can pay off their loans is, first of all, I think that, Jonathan Woodley, you'd mentioned we need to look at the costs. And the costs started to skyrocket after 2010. Mm-hmm. And government gets in, and so the idea that everybody has to pay off these loans, if somebody decided that they didn't want to go to college and they, you know, are, you know, a welder or an electrician or whatever, it's not fair that they pay these other people's loans off. So I think we need to kind of free up the, you know, lower taxes and free up the free market to be able to hire these people. I wanted to mention this to you, though. This is from Ron. He had emailed me. He said, when the states quit supporting public universities and allow the universities to increase tuition exponentially and provide loans to cover the high tuition costs, the system changed dramatically. Is there an effort, and this is what I've thought, to start to use the endowment accounts to provide loans to the students who attend the colleges? Then we're going to start to have accountability. And if the endowments provide the loans, costs may go down, and there may be a very concerted effort to make sure the students are well prepared for high-paying jobs in order to pay back the loans. I thought that was a great idea. Cody, we've got about a minute.
Well, he's exactly right. In fact, in the article, I've got a quote from President Trump where in 2019 he addressed this and he talked about some policies where colleges should have some skin in the game. And he's exactly talking about that. We're talking about the $40 billion endowment that Harvard has or the $30 billion that Yale has. He said that, you know, they've got these ridiculous endowments and yet middle-class families are struggling. And so they need to have skin in the game. They need to be putting out degrees that people can use that lead to high-paying jobs so they can actually pay back the loans.
Agree. And, you know, I was out in California. I had gone over to Stanford because I wanted to do some research at the library. And I was very astounded to see that it did not look like there were a lot of American students there. And I think a lot of those educations are being paid for through endowments. So we're going to continue this conversation. Be sure and check out Cody's piece, though, on my website. It is very well researched, very well thought out. Cody Hubley, it's great to have you here.
Yeah. And you know what? I'll point out, even though we call it an op-ed, these are not opinions. These are facts. Whether we're talking about plastic bags or electric cars, I make sure to just go by the facts.
And you've done a great job on that. Jonathan Woodley, it's great to have you in studio. Again,
thank you, Kim.
That email is jpwoodley.com, jpwoodley.com. There's all kinds of great information there. Our quote today is from Andrew Carnegie, and he said, "People who aren't able to motivate themselves must be content with mediocrity, no matter how impressive their other talents." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell